From the National Institutes of Health in Bethesda, Maryland, this is NIH Research Radio. Welcome to episode 36 of NIH Research Radio, with news about the ongoing medical research at the National Institutes of Health, the nation's medical research agency. I'm your host, Bill Schmalfeld. Coming up on this edition, even though Father's Day has come and gone, Wally Akinso has some advice for dads that can help them assure they'll be around for many Father's Days to come. We'll have a report about a study that shows that retinopathy, or deterioration of the retina, may be prevented or lessened by a change in the diet. Wally returns with a look at the first anniversary of the National Institute of Diabetes, Digestive and Kidney Diseases Celiac Disease Awareness Campaign. But first, analysis of a national sample of individuals with alcohol dependence reveals five distinct subtypes of the disease, according to a new study by scientists at the National Institute of Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism. That's next on NIH Research Radio. How can you boost your chances for a healthy pregnancy? What should you do to recognize and prevent deep vein thrombosis? Where can you turn for the latest word on bladder control surgery for women and protection against skin cancer? It's the July edition of NIH News and Health. Each issue of NIH News and Health is packed with information and web resources designed to help you make better decisions about your health. NIH News and Health, available online at newsandhealth.nih.gov. In a report that should help dispel the notion of the typical alcoholic, five distinct subtypes of the disease have been identified by scientists at the National Institute of Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism, part of the National Institutes of Health. Previous efforts to identify alcoholism subtypes focused primarily on individuals who were hospitalized or otherwise receiving treatment for their alcoholism. However, recent reports from the NIAAA's National Epidemiologic Survey on Alcohol and Related Conditions, also known as NESARC, suggest that only about one-fourth of people with alcoholism have ever received treatment, meaning a substantial proportion of people with alcoholism were not represented in the samples previously used to define subtypes of this disease. The current study focused on the nearly 1,500 NESARC survey respondents who met diagnostic criteria for alcohol dependence and included individuals in treatment as well as individuals not seeking treatment. The researchers identified unique subtypes of alcoholism based on the respondents' family history of alcoholism, age of onset of regular drinking and alcohol problems, symptom patterns of alcohol dependence and abuse, and the presence of additional substance abuse and mental disorders. There's the young adult subtype, comprising 31.5% of American alcoholics. These are young adult drinkers with relatively low rates of co-occurring substance abuse and other mental disorders, a low rate of family alcoholism, who rarely seek any kind of help for their drinking. There's the young antisocial subtype, 21% of U.S. alcoholics. They tend to be in their mid-20s, had early onset of drinking and alcohol problems. More than half come from families with alcoholism, and about half have a psychiatric diagnosis of antisocial personality disorder. Many have had major depression, bipolar disorder, and anxiety problems, and more than 75% of this group smoked cigarettes and marijuana. Many also had cocaine and opiate addictions. More than a third of this group seek help for their drinking. Third is the functional subtype. This group makes up about 19.5% of American alcoholics. They're typically middle-aged, well-educated, with stable jobs and families. About a third of them have a multi-generational family history of alcoholism, and about a quarter of the group have had major depressive illness sometime in their lives. Nearly 50% were smokers. The fourth group is the intermediate familial subtype. This group makes up about 19% of U.S. alcoholics. They're middle-aged, with about 50% coming from families with multi-generational alcoholism. Almost half have suffered from clinical depression, and 20% had bipolar disorder. Most were tobacco smokers, and nearly one in five had problems with cocaine and marijuana use. Only 25% of this group ever sought treatment for their problem drinking. Finally, there's the chronic severe subtype. Making up 9% of American alcoholics, this group is mostly middle-aged individuals who had early onset of drinking and alcohol problems with high rates of antisocial personality disorder and criminality. Almost 80% of this group come from families with multi-generational alcoholism. They have the highest rates of other psychiatric disorders, including depression, bipolar disorder, and anxiety disorders, as well as high rates of smoking and marijuana, cocaine, and opiate dependence. 2/3 of these alcoholics seek help for their drinking problems, making them the most prevalent type of alcoholic in treatment. The study authors also reported that co-occurring psychiatric and other substance abuse problems are associated with the severity of alcoholism and entering into treatment. Attending AA meetings and other 12-step programs is the most common form of help-seeking for drinking problems, yet help-seeking remains relatively rare. You can read more about this study in the online journal Drug and Alcohol Dependence. After this short break, Wally Akinso has a little post-Father's Day advice for American dads. That's next on NIH Research Radio. No doubt about it, you're on your way to the top. You're young, you've got the education, you've got the talent. So what's the harm in a little celebrating? I mean, what could possibly go wrong?
Come on, tough guy, chug it, be a man.
Chug, 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 chug.
You are under arrest for disorderly conduct. You have the right to remain silent. Anything you say can and will be used against you.
Please step out of the car, sir. I'm now going to proceed with the field sobriety test.
What could possibly go wrong? Plenty. That's what. The path to success is tough enough for young adults. Why make it even tougher? If alcohol is a problem for you or someone you know, visit www.niaaa.nih.gov for more information. Brought to you by this station and the National Institutes of Health, an agency of the United States Department of Health and Human Services.
Father's Day may have come and gone, but Wally Akinso has some advice for dads who want to be around for many Father's Days to come.
Dads of the world, it's time to put the sweets down and get physically active if you want to spend many healthy years with your family on Father's Day. Cardiovascular disease is a major complication and the leading cause of early death among people with diabetes. In fact, 2 out of 3 people with diabetes die from heart disease or stroke. In the U.S., almost 11 million of all men aged 20 years or older have diabetes. Dr. Lawrence Blond, chair of the National Diabetes Education Program, shared some ideas on how men can deal with diabetes.
Men can learn to manage their diabetes by regularly seeing their healthcare professionals, making sure that they get diabetes education that is provided to them, ideally by certified diabetes educators working as part of a diabetes team. And then they can go to resources like the National Diabetes Education Program's website.
Dr. Blond said men with diabetes can lower their risk of having a heart attack, stroke, or other diabetes complication by managing the ABCs of diabetes, which are A1C, a measure of average blood glucose, while also keeping a close eye on their blood pressure and cholesterol. Dr. Blond said men should ask for support from their loved ones to make managing their diabetes a family affair.
People with diabetes, there's a greater risk that their family members may have diabetes, and so it's important that those individuals also get appropriately screened for diabetes.
Dr. Blond added that men should work with their healthcare team to develop a self-care plan, which includes eating healthy and being more physically active. The NDEP is a part of the National Institute of Diabetes, Digestive, and Kidney Diseases. For more information, visit www.ndep.nih.gov or call 1-800-438-5383. This is Wally Akinso at the National Institutes of Health, Bethesda, Maryland.
A study shows that retinopathy, or deterioration of the retina, may be prevented or lessened by a change in the diet. The study, a collaborative effort by researchers at the National Eye Institute and the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism at the NIH, along with Children's Hospital Boston, Brigham and Women's Hospital, Massachusetts General Hospital, and the University of Gothenburg in Sweden, demonstrated that omega-3 polyunsaturated fatty acids protected against the development of retinopathy in mice.
What we found was that there is obviously an influence on these inflammatory processes, things that would lead to inflammation in the eye, and the omega-3 fatty acid-fed animals actually had a lower intensity of inflammation within the retina, to the point that it actually helped new vessels, damaged vessels, or missing vessels, grow back within the retina.
That was Dr. John Paul Sangiovanni, an NEI staff scientist and one of the lead authors of the study, which looked at the effect of the omega-3 fatty acids EPA and DHA derived from fish. Although this study provides new evidence suggesting the possibility that omega-3 fatty acids act as protective factors in diseases that affect blood vessels in the retina, Dr. Sangiovanni said more research is needed.
We have a 4,000-person trial that's currently underway. It's known as the Age-Related Eye Disease Study 2, and in that study, we're actually giving people omega-3 fatty acids, and we'll follow them for 5 years.
The clinical trial will, in part, assess the effect of omega-3 fatty acids DHA and EPA on the progression of age-related macular degeneration, the leading cause of vision loss in Americans 60 years of age and older. An upcoming clinical trial at Children's Hospital Boston will test the effects of omega-3 supplements in premature infants. For more information on the Age-Related Eye Disease Study 2, log on to www.clinicaltrials.gov. When we come back, Wally Akinso tells us about the one-year anniversary of the National Institute of Diabetes, Digestive, and Kidney Diseases Celiac Disease Awareness Campaign. That's next on NIH Research Radio. The National Institutes of Health will host a Cancer Disparities Summit July 16th, 17th, and 18th, bringing together some of the nation's top researchers in the field of cancer health disparities. NIH grantees, health professionals, and community advocates from across the country will gather to discuss their research, successful program strategies, challenges, and accomplishments. The summit will be at the Bethesda North Marriott Conference Center and Hotel, 5701 Marinelli Road, Bethesda, Maryland. The summit will provide an opportunity for journalists and science writers to learn more about current research in the field and dialogue with researchers and experts from across the nation. The overall theme for the Cancer Health Disparities Summit 2007 is Catalyzing Transdisciplinary Regional Partnerships to Eliminate Cancer Health Disparities. Keynote speakers include Dr. John E. Niederhuber, director of the National Cancer Institute, Dr. Sonia A. Springfield, director of the NCI Center to Reduce Cancer Health Disparities, Dr. Barbara Alving, director of the National Center for Research Resources, George Strait, director of the National Center on Minority Health and Health Disparities Office of Communications, Hazel Edney of Black Press USA, Stella Choi of Asian Fortune Newspaper, and Sandra Basu of U.S. Medicine. This year's program is co-sponsored by the National Cancer Institute, the National Center for Research Resources, and the National Center on Minority Health and Health Disparities, all part of the National Institutes of Health. For more information on the summit, log on to cancermeetings.org/CHDSummit07 or crchd.cancer.gov/news/summit-2007. In the grand pantheon of disease, it's not one that gets a great deal of attention. For the past year, one institute at the NIH has been working to change that. Wally Akinso has this report.
It's the one-year anniversary of the National Institute of Diabetes, Digestive, and Kidney Diseases Celiac Disease Awareness Campaign. The campaign's mission is to heighten awareness of celiac disease among health professionals and the public. Celiac disease is a digestive disease that damages the small intestine and interferes with absorption of nutrients from food. People who have celiac disease cannot tolerate a protein called gluten, found in wheat, rye, and barley. Gluten is found mainly in foods, but may also be found in products we use every day, such as stamp and envelope adhesive, medicines, and vitamins. Dr. Frank Hamilton, NIDDK's chief of the Digestive Diseases Program in the Division of Digestive Diseases and Nutrition, discusses the campaign's accomplishments within the year.
I think our biggest accomplishment is really getting the awareness about celiac disease. We've been very pleased and honored that we've invoked the community to really go out and do some public speaking, as well as having the societies join with the NIH in highlighting the importance of celiac disease, not only among physicians, but also among the lay community. Some of the major contributions we think that we've accomplished in this last year is a heightened awareness of what celiac disease. There have been several publications, not only in the Washington, D.C. area, but also in USA Today and Parade magazine about what celiac disease is. So these are some major accomplishments that we have been very pleased that the campaign has really done to make people aware of this condition.
Dr. Hamilton said the disease is largely underdiagnosed for several reasons. For instance, celiac disease can present through a broad range of symptoms, many of which physicians do not readily associate with the disease. For more information about celiac disease and campaign materials, visit www.celiac.nih.gov. This is Wally Akinso at the National Institutes of Health, Bethesda, Maryland.
And with that, we come to the end of this episode of NIH Research Radio. Please join us on Friday, July 27th, when episode 37 of NIH Research Radio will be available for download. These stories are also available on the NIH Radio News Service website, www.nih.gov/news/radio. Our daily 60-second feature, NIH Health Matters, is heard on radio stations nationwide, as well as on XM Satellite Radio, the Health Star Radio Network, and online at www.federalnewsradio.com. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please feel free to contact me. The info is right there on the podcast webpage. That email address, ws159h@nih.gov. Once again, that email address, ws159h@nih.gov. And a quick shout-out, if I may, to Bill Gerald with thanks for your very kind email of earlier this week. I'm your host, Bill Schmalfeld. NIH Research Radio is a presentation of the NIH Radio News Service, part of the News Media Branch, Office of Communications and Public Liaison, and the Office of the Director at the National Institutes of Health in Bethesda, Maryland, an agency of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.